Allen Ampersand is recorded on the traditional and unceded territories of the Wolastoqwell and the Mi'kmaq.
Hi, I'm Jenna Lynn Albert.
And I'm Rebecca Salazar.
And this is Allen Ampersand,
a poetry podcast recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hello, Jenna.
We are sitting here recording in my apartment in Fredericton, New Brunswick. And we'll start this podcast by apologizing for any unwitting cat noises. We have our resident cat here, Maggie, who may be meowing throughout the podcast.
She's been pretty vocal so far.
She has a lot to say about poetry. And we're super excited to be starting this off. It's a new project that Fredericton is working on, and it's going to be new and fresh, and some poetry content coming right from the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. And this is your legacy project as poet laureate, which I'll start by congratulating you for being elected to the position.
Thank
I don't know if there
so
was an election
much.
Entirely, but yeah, I'm excited to see what you do with this, and I'm glad you've invited me to the podcast part of it.
It was a easy choice to make. I thought about incredible Fredericton poets and was like, I need Rebecca to be my co-host on this immediately. It's really cool to have this kind of project coming out of a city that has such a prominent poetry community and one that we hope to kind of show off and promote and expose to new poetry that maybe they're not as familiar with from across the country.
Yeah. When I moved to Fredericton, I didn't know that it was known as Poetry Corner of Canada, or Atlantic Canada at least. And there is that spot on campus at UNB that is sort of dedicated to Bliss Carman and Charles G.D. Roberts and sort of the like older, sort of the old guard of Atlantic poetry, if I can say that. But yeah, I'm interested in getting to showcase the new poets who are doing completely different things, who are not just the dead white guys of Atlantic Canada.
It's
who have been
so
celebrated,
true.
I think, enough, and haven't left enough room for the new people. So I'm glad we get to make that room a little bit.
Yeah, and to feature some emerging poets, and I should add that emerging poets doesn't necessarily mean young. Emerging poets can come out of our caves, as it sounds like, out of our hibernation at any point in our lives. But there's a lot of really incredible new poets that are entering this literary scene and really changing it up, which is something we are very excited to help promote and to give voice to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in what emerging means, because it gets kind of tacked on to a lot of people before they have a first book or up to when they have like their fourth book.
Yeah.
So it's such an undefined term that kind of gets selectively used either to kind of hold people up as like the new golden child of poetry, or it kind of gets used to like diminish people for not having done enough yet or not being established enough yet. And I'm interested in playing with what that can mean, because you mentioned like the cave, the poetry cave, and emerging from hibernation, but like what are people emerging from or into? Is this a caterpillar situation, or yeah, the deep poetry cave in the woods, or emerging from underrepresentation, for instance? And there's so many options.
That's such a really great perspective on it. I think there's so many things that can hold new poets back. And to explore some of those barriers, whether it be race or class or other instances where poets don't have the same opportunities to get their voices out, particularly if they don't have the chance to go to grad school to focus on creative writing, I think it's really important to investigate some of the origins that mm-hmm. these poets come from, and how, as a community, we can be more welcoming and more accepting of different voices. Something that immediately comes to mind is how spoken word poetry can kind of be looked down upon just because it's not valued in the same way that print poetry is. And I can see some industry changes going on where you're seeing spoken word poetry put into print and get more acknowledgement. And it's so crucial to investigate that kind of thing? Why is it that it's not valued as much? Is it primarily the old school poets that don't view it as important? Is it that as a society we don't view it as important in the same way? So I think we'll be looking at some different genres and styles of poetry that might not be getting the same attention that they really deserve to be getting. And a podcast is kind of a cool way to be approaching that, especially spoken word. We get to feature.
Yeah. That's one thing I'm really excited about, too, about this, is we get the opportunity to not just feature the poetry and various different kinds of poetry, but also the poets themselves, and get to hear their stories and who they are and their voices in a very literal way, as well as in the sense that we're getting to know people who haven't been necessarily included in what CanLit tries to make itself.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm looking forward to, for sure.
When you think poetry podcast, it's often a kind of sound snippet you get, like, through the Poetry Foundation is how I always imagined it. And I think it's really cool to approach it from an interview perspective, having it be kind of casual conversation, and then go into the poets reading their own work. There's something about hearing a poet vocalize things they've put to paper that is so exciting and exhilarating and can change the way a poem is received. I've seen people that wouldn't pick up a poetry book to read get so invested in poetry by going to a reading and hearing a poet perform it, which is one of the really great opportunities a podcast allows, is to have that broad base for a poet to get their performance out there.
Yeah. Performance is definitely something that I think is underlooked, particularly for people who are coming from sort of quote unquote page poetry backgrounds, which I definitely grew up in and kind of started writing in. I didn't know performance was part of the game, even though I was also kind of trying to study theater at the time. I didn't relate poetry and performance at all until I started encountering spoken word poets and more performative poets. And it's such an electric version of poetry. It's so much more alive. And I think even the people who are most attached to the page and want their poetry to be visual in a way, performing and thinking about it and thinking about how you're going to vocalize and bring into the world sound-wise and in embodying the sound of your poetry, that's so important. Even if that isn't the central part of your work, it is a way of reaching people. And that, I think, is a really important and definitely underlooked part of it. Then again, for people who have been writing in more performative poetry styles, like you said, in spoken word, it gets looked down on because it's so immediate and often so ephemeral. A lot of spoken word poets don't put their work to print and live entirely and make careers entirely out of performance. But because it's not tangible or something you can stick on a shelf or in a syllabus as easily, that kind of gets looked down on or forgotten, or people who don't want to go to the places where that's being performed also tend to leave themselves out of that.
Yeah. And
there's something really gorgeous there that I think needs to get a wider audience. I grew up in Northern Ontario in Sudbury, where there wasn't much of a literary scene going on. There were a few people doing some reading series and things like that, but it was hard to get to, especially as a young poet, because I didn't know who was there. I didn't know if I would be welcome. And of course, everything kind of gravitated towards Toronto or towards Montreal, or people would fly way out west to Vancouver. And then there was the whole specter of like the States and New York, which I won't even get into, but having lived most of my life in small towns like that, I was super impressed when I came to Fredericton, which is much smaller than anywhere else I've ever lived. And there was so much life here in the literary scene. And it's got its little flaws like everywhere else does. But I'm amazed by how many writers are writing here and active here and going to reading series and making things happen. Yeah, you've got the whole background of the whole like old guard poets corner, But I think there is a really vital new generation of people starting up here. And across different arts, too, you can kind of see there's this sort of groundswell of people starting new things. And it's really fascinating to be around for this.
Yeah, I think for a while there was some dire things going on in CanLit. And there's still dire things going on. But it felt like we were very much in the winter of our discontent. And that some of these young and emerging poets are bringing about a spring of sorts.
But yeah, I'm sure we're going to get into the whole winter of discontent in CanLit, which does feel like it's never ending.
Yeah.
We'll get into that, I'm sure, more than once in future episodes. But yeah, I think for now, starting this podcast, I do love the idea of focusing on that new growth that's happening.
Yeah.
Just seeing people who are so tired of being unrepresented or underrepresented or misrepresented entirely by CanLit and what it wants to be in a certain version of itself. Seeing queer and trans writers coming up and making their own names and recreating the language to make their experiences fit into the world. Seeing Indigenous writers and people of color and Black writers, particularly, there's a really big groundswell of Black writers coming out of Nova Scotia.
Yes.
And a kind of across the continent renaissance of Indigenous writers. I'm like borrowing that term as cheesy as it is from like, I think The Walrus, which has all sorts of issues. But yeah, just seeing sort of this huge upturn in the volume of these people's voices who have been unrepresented and kind of not really allowed into CanLit, making their own literature, making their own stories, and not necessarily turning CanLit into something new, but creating something way beyond that. That kind of goes beyond all the borders of Canada and CanLit and Canadian identity. And it is very community-based. It's not based on these sort of tired nationalisms or ideas of having this particular kind of identity. It's very much about people supporting their communities that they live in and breathe in and survive with, and making poetry out of that, which is really beautiful to watch.
Mm. And there's a new sense of space that wasn't there before. And you can see there's some progress with literary magazines and publishers that aren't expecting BIPOC writers to adapt to fit into their expectations. They're making space for them, but there's still so far to go, which is something I hope we really touch on in these conversations, that we've gone a long way, but there's still a lot of problematic things going on that I think as a community we need to be aware of and do better, and to support these new spaces and to lift these new writers up. It's really important work to be done that I think hasn't been prioritized always. And you can see there's festivals and reading series that are going on now, like Indigenous Brilliance, that are just doing phenomenal work. And I just want to keep seeing that. And also to know, like, not to put the burden on these writers either. There's emotional trauma that goes along with doing all that hard work. So really, as a community, we need to work together to accomplish that and not expect it from these writers that have already been disenfranchised and abused by this community that they just want to be a part of.
Yeah, I think definitely recognizing what power we have in our positions. I really like that we have the chance in your role as the Poet Laureate and in our education levels. We met at the Masters of Creative Writing at UNB here in Fredericton. And we have that kind of resource and background that we can now use to find the people who are creating what we needed that we didn't have or that they didn't have growing up, whether that was in small towns or in writing communities that were insufficient and inadequate or whatever the case may be. People who are changing the world to make every kind of future possible and imaginable I know, like, getting to see these writers do what they're doing and building what they're building, and getting to participate in that and enable it with whatever privilege I have is, yeah, it's amazing. And it feels so affirming. I definitely grew up with a lot of lack of seeing myself represented, or I didn't see any possibilities for myself that I could imagine. There was no one who I could recognize myself in doing the kinds of things that I'm now able to do, mm, because other people stepped up and finally made that happen. And I think once we're given that sort of gift, in whatever form it takes, just making room for more of that and, yeah, lifting the load from the people who are often tasked with the emotional and physical and endless institutional labor it takes to make those changes. Yeah, we've got to use what we've got. And definitely, I'm excited to use this podcast for that.
And it's time to let go. And it's all you. Just let go.
A little bit about me. I'm Jenalyn Albert. I'm an Acadian poet and cat enthusiast, as the occasional interruption by my cat Maggie will prove, I suppose. I live in Fredericton, New Brunswick, but I'm originally from St. John. I recently graduated from the University of New Brunswick's creative writing program and have had some poems published in incredible literary magazines like The Puritan and The Thames Review. I wanted to share my White Whale, the magazine I have yet to be published in, but I dream of being published in someday, and that's Room Magazine, which you should 100% check out. I am currently a member of the Fiddleheads editorial board, and I'm also a first reader for Goose Lane Edition's Ice House Poetry imprint, which is super rewarding work, getting to read individual poems and whole manuscripts of poetry. I recently had my first collection of poetry, Beck and Call, come out with Nightwood Editions, and it's easy to find. It's the book cover with the cat shamelessly cleaning itself. You will not be able to miss it. I'm also currently serving a 2-year term as the City of Fredericton's Poet Laureate, and that's where this podcast originated from. It was through that opportunity that we were able to have the funds and resources to really make this podcast a reality and get some poetry content out into the world in a way that's accessible.
So I'm Rebecca Salazar. I'm a queer, brown, Latinx, second-generation immigrant, femme of color, living with various chronic illnesses. I write poetry and nonfiction, and I'm also part of a 3-person multimedia collaboration called Warped with cellist Emily Kennedy and textile artist Emily Blair. I edit poetry at Plenitude Magazine and at The Fiddlehead. I would love to read your writing, so please submit. I am currently a PhD candidate in creative writing at the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton, where I'm, I think, one of the guinea pigs for the program, which is pretty new. Mm. I've had the pleasure of publishing poetry and nonfiction in various journals across Canada, both in print and online. And I have 2 chapbooks from amazing chapbook presses. So that's Guzzle from Anstruther Press in Toronto, thanks to Jim Johnstone and Katie Feaster-Yen, who was my editor, and The Knife You Need to Justify the Wound from Rahila's Ghost, where Mallory Tater, one of the publishers, was my editor for that one. And I am excited to continue with this podcast and see what we get up to.
These are the best days of our lives, high highs, so please don't waste
I spent a lot of my youth learning French. I grew up in a family that spoke primarily English. My mom's Anglophone, and my dad, though he grew up with Francophone parents, took French immersion as well and kind of lost his language. So it was always a struggle for me to get in touch with that language component of the Acadian identity. And it really came to light when I was traveling across New Brunswick and realized I couldn't communicate as well as I originally thought I could in this language that was so closely connected to the identity that I I connected with from being a little girl, having my mama and papa talk about growing up and their experiences as Acadians. So that's where this poem comes from. Identity crisis at Dixie Lee, Shippigan, NB. 12 years of French immersion didn't prepare me for this moment. Ma belle girl wanting for the words to order at a Dixie Lee in Northern NB, presque vue. I batter my brain, deep fry parietal, temporal lobes in a freshet of grease. I remove them prematurely. Gone all Shubenacadie Sam and nothing's near done. Not winter, not the long of a drive home, not the knot of hunger for Acadie, Gabrielle to my Evangeline, lost and found, long enough to go bad at the back of the fridge behind the Baxters in the Bay Cell. My fast food French sits heavy in the belly, stains the clamshell takeaway box with imprints like wet asses on patio chairs. It's not an easy cleanup. I've cracked into the lobster sans les flyers, fingers fishy, hands épaillant, flopping uselessly as my tongue over basic back home vocabulary. Comment ça flippe? And my second poem I'm going to read. I grew up in St. John originally. That's my hometown. And when I moved to Fredericton, there was a sense of isolation. It was the first time I was really away from my family, which is super tight-knit. And this poem came from finding home in unusual places. Unnamed. They found that boa constrictor near my apartment, red-tailed, limp on someone's front lawn, dangerous in the most innocent of ways, a drawered kitchen knife. She could have coiled around a pet, someone's cat, hypodermic embrace restricting blood, but September's end is more predatory than she turned out to be. I take the long way home, meandering Fredericton streets to avoid the construction's suffocating dust, its pylon presence on Connaught. The detour's familiar now, like the dead squirrel matted to the pavement by browning blood in front of the elementary school, forgotten like a hat, a lost mitten, a pack of flyers. There's no brick housing or seed-bare lawns on Albert Street. No three-wheeled wagons or deflated teddies discarded in puddles. I can hear the air brakes of the buses shuttling school children to and from, their wheels throwing back chalkboard debris, crushed acorns and leaves as thin as loose leaf. The street signs a plaque nailed to my family's door, white letters on blue, unlike the emerald road markers in St. John. Albert. The T. Silent is the street mid-afternoon, the R lingering on the lips like salt cod or oyster liqueur, but names become unrecognizable in the capital, where eyes roll like R's at Acadiens. A stray skittering through backyards, I cut into the woods, snaking between maples over crushed drop seed and teething thistle, heading toward eggshell siding, a solitary one-bedroom. I imagine viridescent scales at my ankles, the reptile cool embrace of another wanderer tasting its surroundings, uncaged, unnamed.
The first poem I'll read is called Body Heat, and it's from my first chapbook, Guzzle. There are a few lines in here from other sources. I was using a lot of found lines in these poems. There's a line here from Leslie Jameson's The Empathy Exams. There's a line I borrowed from my cousin's, at the time, four-year-old daughter. And I think there's a line in here that I adapted from something I overheard downtown in Fredericton. Body Heat. The glitter outline of your torso on the bed confesses that we cannot guess what marks we make. Skin like the surface of the sun. Any touch encroaching on your orbit burns to ash, neglects to scar. My food addiction when your pregnancy end stopped. I gained your baby weight. I didn't know if this was empathy or theft. Mommy, look, I'm drawing you, Mommy. It looks just like you look, and you have no face. Since the fire boiled the fat from my bones, I'm a billowing tarp at half-mast on a scaffolding. Watch me swell in the updraft. So I'm going to read part three of a longer poem suite called Virgins, and this is in The Knife You Need to Justify the Wound, my second chapbook. And part three is called Delphinapterus lucus. It's the Latin name for beluga whales. Scudding across the Saint-Laurent was our last date. Two horny beasts and plus one unicorn, M and C and me, gone fishing, gone whale watching. We share ice cream on deck in steely minus 10, risking frostbite or worse, observation. Tourists and Gore-Tex crowd the railing, their matching kid sets shrieking at our waists. A tour guide cracks her stiff voice overhead. Belugas don't usually mate in the fall, but let's see what's ahead. Did you know the calves drink green milk from the mothers? The tugboat sidles to a white knot, a disturbance. Sound of water, of whales, which is mostly more water, more roiling whales than we can count, dozens. So much muscle brawning at the surface. Slick white skin, like clotted paint, says C, and M confirms it's eggshell. Some kid shouting, Mom, Mom, are they fighting? What's that red thing? Does that hurt? So many long maroon harpoons bob in the water. They nod fiercely, wield hunger too sore to explain as they slip slide, leave score marks on white rubber flanks. Science knows so little of beluga sex. They've made the Wikipedia list of homosexual species. No list mentions the orgies, but we know belugas only mate with full consent, a pearly underwater dance. Science could learn a thing or two. We three tongue at a slurry of whale white ice cream, vanilla. We take turns, slurping liquefied forms of the halos we've lost. Tonight, our naked arms will crackle together like radio static, transmitting dead voices in prayer from my asthmatic youth. Look how far we come for sweetness in the cold.
All right, what am I reading? I'm going to start off hot with three books that are currently on my nightstand. The first one is Hannah Chaffee's It Begins With Body. It's a collection of poetry and illustrations, and I had the pleasure of meeting Hannah while I was in Toronto reading at the Art Bar. You can find Hannah on social media as Frizz Kid, and they are an amazing artist. Next is It's a Big Deal by Dina Del Bucchia, which is a gorgeous book. Just the cover alone is so vibrant and fun, and I highly, highly recommend it. It was one of my plane reads while I was traveling. And lastly, and this is an exciting one because we'll have this poet on the podcast very soon, is Matthew Walsh's These Are Not the Potatoes of My Youth. I'm super excited to have an East Coast poet on the podcast, and Matthew's collection is absolutely stunning. I can't look at a potato without thinking of Matthew now.
That's fantastic. I feel like there's a marketing campaign in that. I'm actually really excited too for Matthew's reading because you currently work at Goose Lane Editions reading the incoming manuscripts, and I previously held that position before you, and while I was doing that I got the chance to read Matthew's collection before it was published. I think it had a different title then, and I'm really excited to see how it's grown in the editing process from like first submission into their final published copy and how it goes in performance as well. What I'm reading right now is I just started Amber Dawn's novel Sodom Road Exit. And I am only about one or two chapters in, but there's already been a macrame Jesus.
Yes.
And I am very into the way that gets handled so far by the main character. What else am I reading right now? A lot of submittable submissions, to be honest.
Yes.
I just finished a term of reading slash pile entries for the Fiddlehead, as well as some final cuts on the poetry board. I'm excited about some of the poems that are going to be coming out in some upcoming issues, including a lot of really funny poems.
Yes.
There's a couple in particular that I'm thinking of, and I won't really provide any spoilers yet. But do send more funny poetry, everyone. Journals love reading that.
Yeah, I think there's something great about poems that have that humor to them that you don't always encounter. And when it's done well, it's such a good payoff. I find they're also some of the best ones to hear read aloud, which we're always big fans of. Obviously, this podcast is going to be focusing a lot on poems performed. So it would be a lot of fun to hear maybe some of our future guests read some funny poems.
It's time for the dumpster dive.
We will go into something that may become somewhat of a segment for us, which is the dumpster dive. We're going to talk about some of the maybe trashier things we've been listening to or watching lately. I will admit that I still watch Riverdale, and I don't know why. It's terrible. It's terrible. But I'm invested now. Like, it feels like I almost have to keep watching to see just how bad it gets. So that's probably my trashy TV show.
Oh, completely. I feel the same about it. I've, like, kept watching it mostly because someone I know, a poet who may be featured on the podcast eventually, recommended it by saying, you need to watch this. It's really gay. And I did watch it, and it did get progressively gayer and weirder. And I don't know if anyone's writing it anymore. And this is no offense to the writers, but I feel like they're pulling plot points out of a hat.
Yeah.
But the hat doesn't have any sense of coherence either. or genre.
It's so true. And you have such high hopes because there's some really powerful storylines about date rape and women gathering together and protecting one another. And other shows are doing similar things, but just pulling it off better, like Sabrina, the reboot, the gritty reboot Netflix is doing. I don't know if I've
seen the new season. Yeah.
They have some really great queer storylines going on that I'm very excited for, especially in terms of bi presence and looking into a character who is going through their transition. It's something I haven't seen done well on a lot of TV shows, and Sabrina's one that's surprising me. I'd still call it one of those shows that's a little trashier, but you still have an affection for it. But it's just doing things better than what Riverdale is right now.
Yeah. So not quite a problematic fave, but a questionable fave.
Yeah.
I feel that way lately about RuPaul's Drag Race, yes, which I am still watching largely because it became like something I watched a lot with a group of friends that I was really close with and living near for a few years now. And it's what we still talk about. And now we're like obsessed and just send each other memes, and that's how we keep contact over long distances. Just Drag Race memes, the worst of the worst.
All the time.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those like trashy faves, but it's intentionally trashy, so I don't know if that mitigates it or makes it worse.
Yeah, it knows what it is, but sometimes in the worst of ways.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And this is a total shameless promotion thing, but I'm going to plug Matthew Stepanek of,
yes,
of what is their podcast's name?
Get Lit.
Yes. So Matthew's chapbook called Relying on That Body is a series of poems that Matthew wrote for each of the eliminated queens in Drag Race season 10. I had the pleasure of editing the chapbook for Matthew and getting to talk about the poems, but also just fangirl about particular queens.
Yes.
And make really bad puns about them. But the collection has so much heart that it was a really fun way to get to like engage with this trashy culture that is bringing queer culture into the mainstream in a very strange, often problematic way.
Yeah.
But to still love it.
And that has been our dumpster dive. We hope you enjoy. And it's something we're going to hopefully bring back with our guests, asking them what they're reading, what their favorite trashy pop culture of the moment is. And I believe that's it for our first episode, our first not really episode, more introduction to us to the podcast, what we'll be doing, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what we get up to from now on, and we hope you'll keep listening. So thanks for tuning in.
Elwyn Ampersand is produced and edited by Jenna Noor. It's recorded by Adam Ganong. Intro music and additional music were performed by Adam Washburn. Elwyn Ampersand is hosted by Jenna Lynn Albert and Rebecca Salazar. This show is made possible thanks to the City of Fredericton. Playing us out now is the song Drown Me by Wangle Tepp, an electronic musician from Fredericton.